Good morning, Oregon. I'm Finn J.D. John, Finn at offbeatoregon.com, and this is the Daily Offbeat Oregon History Podcast. Thank you for loading me down and queuing me up, and I hope you enjoy the show. The two cross-country runners running through a trailless part of the city park that was supposed to be off-limits were breaking the law. But then so were Frank and Ruth, the father and daughter that the runners found camping there. Frank and Ruth, police never released their last name, had been living in the park for 4 years, and in that entire time, the runners were the only people to find them. What's really unusual about this story is it took place in downtown Portland. You want to talk about the urban jungle? Well, we've got it. Portland is probably the only city in which you can get lost in the woods badly enough to get in real trouble without ever leaving city limits. Several other cities can point to larger urban parks, but good old Stumptown is the only one that has so much wild acreage so close to the center of the city. It's called Forest Park, and it's a 5,000-acre finger of thickly wooded land stretching into Portland from the northwest along the Willamette River. Forest Park's roots go back to 1903 when John Charles Olmsted came to town to help Portland with its parks plan. Actually, Olmsted was primarily here to help out with the Lewis and Clark Centennial Exposition in 1905. But he was helping with the park's plan, too. Olmsted was one of the brothers who designed New York City's Central Park. And he urged the city to set aside a huge piece of land right smack in the middle, the very piece, in fact, that later became Forest Park. But the city had no money to buy the land, and private developers were already carving it up. Early Portland was highly hesitant to spend money on quality of life issues like that. They were too busy making more money. Well, over the next few decades, those developers gave the place their best shot. But it was almost as if Forest Park were predestined by a higher power, as if the efforts of mere puny mortals to turn it into subdivisions were fetching up against the bulwark of divine wrath. Roads would be built, lots would be sold, and then just as people were getting ready to start swinging hammers, the rains would come, and with them the mudslides, which would wash out the roads, and the city would fix the roads at great expense and send the bill to the lot owners, and the lot owners might pay him once. But this happened at least two times. By the mid-1940s, all the owners of the lots had all given up, every single one of them, and quit paying the city's assessments for road upkeep. Their lots were forfeited to the city, and for years the city just sat on the land. During the Depression, it set up woodcutting camps there to help keep people employed. Hopeful citizens, eager to stake out mining claims on the now publicly owned property, drilled oil wells in hopes of hitting something that would enable them to grab a piece of it, with no luck. Finally, in 1945, the City Club of Portland took up cudgels to make the land a park. Members had found Olmsted's recommendations in the original parks plan and thought it was a great idea. After all, the city now owned the whole thing anyway. So 3 years later, on September 25th, 1948, a crowd of people gathered at the site of one of the dry oil wells for the official dedication of Portland's newest and America's largest downtown city park. It was also probably America's ugliest. It was not much to look at. Most of it was clear-cut. Much of it was really quite ugly. But the years have been kind to it, and generations of volunteers have worked to replant it and restore it, and today it's thickly forested, and large swaths of it haven't known a human footstep in decades. As for Frank and Ruth, the father and daughter who were found camping there, they came to Portland in 2000. Frank, jobless and broke and living on a $400 a month veteran's disability benefit, decided that rather than raise his third grader on the streets, he'd set up housekeeping deep in Forest Park. And so he did, and there they lived for 4 full years, while he homeschooled her with a set of encyclopedias and a Bible. He apparently knew what he was doing when they were found. She was of the right age to be in the 7th grade, but tested at the 12th grade level. After the story hit the news, reporters and camera crews got very interested in them. Uncomfortable with all the attention, Frank and Ruth disappeared again, this time into the Coast Range Mountains west of Portland. Today, their whereabouts are unknown. This article was first published on October 25th of 2010 under the headline Family Camped Unnoticed in Downtown Portland for 4 Years. Key sources included works by Vince Patton and Steve Amon, Marcy C. Houle, and Joseph Rose. Well, that's our show for today. Thanks again for listening, and I do hope you enjoyed it. This podcast is part of Offbeat Oregon History, a public history resource for the state we love. For more Offbeat Oregon goodies, social media links, stuff like that, check out our hub page at offbeatoregon.com. There you'll also find photos, art, and other resources that go with today's show, as well as full citations to the sources for this story. The podcast is covered under a Creative Commons license. For details of that, see offbeatoregon.com/cc. Our theme music is by the Atlas String Band and was written by Carmen Ficarra. Listen and download more at atlasstringband.com. And if you're ever in the neighborhood near Oregon State University with time for a cup at Allen Brothers or a pint at McMenamin's, drop me a line. I'm at finn@offbeatoregon.com, or you can ping me on Twitter @offbeatoregon. A fresh Offbeat Oregon History podcast comes out around 6 a.m. each weekday morning, so a new one will be coming your way soon. And until it does, go fill up the rest of today with good stuff. Bye now.